I'm Brian Gibberman with the Podium Gate Podcast. This is the Bucks Bulls portion of our Eastern Conference first round preview over at the Podium Gate. We go from Cavaliers Nets to who the Cavs could potentially face in the second round. The Bulls and Bucks are squaring off in the 3-6 series of the Eastern Conference playoffs. That series will start Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. The Bulls took 3-4 during the regular season, but 1-1 since the trade deadline and the changes with the Bucks. For the Chicago perspective, we start with Kevin Ferragan. He's from Vlogable.com, Nylon Calculus, among some other places. Kevin, how you doing today?
Doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. All right, so is this a series you think Thibodeau can get away with screwing around with his big man combinations and playing Mirotić at the three a little bit, or do you think he has to be really on point with his rotations from that position in this series?
So I'm a little bit of two minds about this. The good thing about this series is, from a Bulls fan's perspective, is that it's probably the only matchup available where Pau Gasol could really be useful in the first round in the East for the Bulls. He has done pretty well against the Bucks this year, and especially earlier in the year. He had a 46-point game, I think it was, where he just abused them basically down low. He didn't, in the later meetings in the year, he didn't quite have the same success. But I think that if there's a team that Thibodeau overplaying Pau, that they'll be able to get away with that, it's probably the Bucks. I'm a little bit worried about the jumbo lineup, as Bulls fans have taken to calling it, just because it really limits what the Bulls when the Bulls are at their best, which is when Nikola Mirotić is at the power forward spot, and you have a traditional center, whether that's Pau or Joakim Noah. You know, either one of them with Mirotić just works a lot better than the other way, having the two of them together, because they just get in each other's way, and it forces Noah typically to run around on the perimeter a lot more than he is really able to with his knee being bad. But on the flip side, I think that Jason Kidd is a little bit better tactically as a coach than Thibodeau. Thibodeau is a little bit stubborn and slow to adjust, whereas I think that Kidd has shown himself to be pretty innovative. And so I think that that Kidd might have an answer for Gasol. And if Thibodeau stays stubborn and keeps with Gasol for too long, I think that could be a problem for the Bulls.
Yeah, last year in that first round series against the Raptors, he went to like Allen Anderson in the starting lineup, I believe, after a couple games when he saw what he had been doing. He took out Sean Livingston and went with Allen Anderson for more shooting after the Nets had all that success in the regular season. That's a good point on Kidd being willing to adjust quickly. What injury updates? What's the late? I know there's. I thought Gibson got hurt on Wednesday. I know Rose didn't finish. You mentioned Noah. Well, what's the latest on all that stuff?
So far as I know, Noah has said that he's going to play on Saturday. He's been kind of hobbled all year, down the stretch with Noah out, it actually worked out okay for a little bit, because you had Pau playing center, and then you had Mirotić, as I mentioned, playing his traditional four spot a lot more frequently. And there's just a lot more space on the floor offensively. And Mirotić coming in had a reputation for not really being a good defensive player, but I actually think that that's not the case. He's got very active hands for a big man. He racks up steals at a pretty good clip, and he even blocks shots to some degree. I mean, he's not, you know, Taj Gibson in terms of rim protection or anything remotely like that, but he blocks shots. He's very active. He does a good job of fronting the post and making guys work for post position. And, you know, he has quick enough feet that nobody's going to blow by him in, like, the face-up game or anything like that. The help defense is hit or miss sometimes, but he's gotten a lot better at that, too, over the course of the year. So I think he's, you know, firmly a plus defender. So you add that with the fact that he spaces the floor, and it's been pretty good. So that has, Noah being out is actually, you know, they've actually looked a little bit better, which is kind of counterintuitive, but I think they're going to need Noah, obviously, to make any kind of run in the playoffs. And I just don't know if he's going to be 100%. He hasn't really been all year. The upside is that they were able to get the wins they needed to get the 3 seed and still get him rest at the end of the year. Gibson has a shoulder strain. He left the game and I guess got a cortisone shot, which doesn't sound great, but Taj is going to play because that's pretty much what he does. Taj playing when he's injured is just not the same guy. He's had some ankle injuries and issues like that. Before he left the game last night, he was playing pretty terribly. and he relies a lot on, being able to extend his arms because he has, you know, kind of go-go gadget arms a little bit, and he also relies on his athleticism. And so having a shoulder injury and, you know, having the lower body injuries, the ankle injuries that he's had all year, it's really sapped a lot of his effectiveness. So that's a problem. In the Bulls, I mean, he's one of the Bulls' more athletic players, and the Bulls just don't have a lot of athleticism anymore. Rose is still really fast, but doesn't have the vertical explosion that he used to. Taj is not the athlete that he was because he's been so injured. Same goes for Noah. And then, you know, Mike Dunleavy is a very good player. I like him a lot, but he's not, you know, much of an athlete at the NBA level. He's got length and all of that, but he's not an explosive guy by any means. And then, so basically you're left with Jimmy Butler is like the only real athlete that the Bulls have anymore. So that's a concern, especially facing a Bucks team that is pretty athletic. As far as Rose goes, apparently he just had some soreness not in the knee that he had the most recent surgery in, the meniscus, but his other knee. So it seems like he's just bouncing back and forth between having knee issues. He said that he's felt that kind of soreness before, and it wasn't a big deal. But I don't know. Anytime Derrick Rose says there's something wrong with his knee, alarm bells go ringing in my head. So, to quote Rose, I would just say, who knows what's going to be the case with him. And, you know, obviously if they don't have Rose, I think that pretty much destroys any chance they have of playing spoiler to Atlanta or the Cavs.
So how would you deal with Rose this is two parts. How would you deal with Rose during the postseason? How do you think Thibodeau deals with Rose during the postseason? Or maybe that's the same.
Well, because it's the playoffs, I think that I'm a little bit more fine with Thibodeau kind of just playing Rose under the assumption that he can play. I guess this is maybe just a selfish fan in me, but I don't know how many more Derrick Rose games we really have just because, he just keeps getting hurt. And so, you know, from that perspective, they have a team that if Rose is going really well, they have a team that has a very small puncher's chance of making a run for a title. And I don't think that that's going to be the case for much longer because their front court is aging. And because Rose looks like he could be, Rose has the potential to be, you know, not much of anything beyond, the end of this contract because if his injuries keep piling up. So I think you kind of just have to take the chance this time through and, you know, try to make a run. So I think that they'll probably play him, you know, as much as he's physically able to. which is a little bit scary for him, I guess. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see because he didn't play that second half. So, and he was the one that requested to sit out. It'll be interesting to see whether there's any sort of drama surrounding that or not, but I'm hoping not. I'm trying to not get too down about it, but my tendency is to fear the worst. And, you know, with that, with Rose, the worst would be that he ends up not being able to really play very much these playoffs again, and, you know, that would be pretty awful.
The Bucks are a plus 550 to win this series. A lot of people seem to like that. Do you agree with them, or are you more confident in the Bulls than others?
I think that I was more confident earlier on when the Bulls looked like they were going to be rolling in pretty healthy. And, of course, then, you know, Noah sat out the last couple of games. You know, Rose looked really good in the game they played against the Sixers, and granted, that was the Sixers, and the Sixers were also without Nerlens Noel or any of their point guards. So, you know, giant, like, huge mound of salt with that. But he looked really good, and then he played very well against the Nets, you know, pretty soon thereafter. So I was feeling very confident. I didn't really think that the Bucks did a chance. I was definitely more confident with them versus against the Wizards, just given what happened last year with the Wizards' front court beating up on the Bulls' front court, and Noah not being 100% and Taj not being 100%. I was just like, that front court kind of scared me a little bit. So I was happy to not have to play them. But, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I do think the kid is a little bit kid probably provides them a little bit of an edge in terms of tactics and you know, ability to make adjustments. I'm kind of down on Thibodeau. A lot of people think he's a top five coach in the league. I don't think he's that. I think he's fine. Like, I think he's got some things that he does well, and I think he has a fair number of things that he is pretty not great at. Lineups is one of them. Installing an offensive system that has any sort of continuity and motion to it. I don't think he's done a very good job of that. The Bulls often bog down in post up isolations, which I complain about frequently. And he also runs guys into the ground, which is like the biggest criticism of him. But I think the other two are actually maybe more important, is that he doesn't necessarily play lineups that make sense together. The jumbo lineup being sort of the one that gets the most flack for that, because it really neutralizes all of the best qualities of the players in it. So Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose, you know, for all of Derrick Rose's faults, one of the things that he still does really well is drive to the basket, and Jimmy Butler is the same way. He's a very good driver when he takes the opportunity to drive. And so having those two guys who are not really good shooters, Butler's been better this year, but he's still not like, you know, Kyle Korver or Stephen Curry or any kind of elite shooter. So you need those driving lanes for those guys for them to be at their most effective. But he plays them with Nikola Mirotic at the three, and the two big guys in the front court, who are both, you know, the Bulls don't, aside from Mirotic, all of the Bulls' front court players are not floor spacers. And so that bogs up the paint so that Rose and Butler can't drive as easily. And it also just makes it easier for the guys that are inside to be covered, because there's just a mess of people in the paint pretty much at all times when they play that lineup, and he continues to go to it, and I don't really know why that is. I don't know if he just feels like he has to play Pau Gasol all these minutes, and if he plays Mirotic at the power forward, somehow he's not going to be able to do that. But whatever the reason, it's just really bad. And he also, you know, Heinrich is out injured right now, and I don't know when he's going to be back or if he's going to be back. But he also, you know, relied way too much on him this year at the expense of Tony Snell, who definitely had games where he was, like, you know, a ghost on offense. But, like, that's Heinrich pretty much every time. He is such a non-threat on the floor that teams just don't guard him. Like, there's, like, a ton of screenshots out there that Bulls fans and Bulls writers have posted, Bulls bloggers mostly, not Bulls writers. The Bulls beat writers treat Kirk with kid gloves, just like the organization does. But he is just not guarded. And the reason, I guess, for playing him over Snell is that he's a better team defender than Snell, which is definitely true. Like, Snell is really bad at navigating screening actions, and he's really bad at help defense, like his responsibilities on that. But in one-on-one defense, he's very good because he has those physical tools, the length and all of that. He plays passing lanes decently well. But he's just – teams respect him as a shooter, and he also can put the ball on the deck and get into the paint and dunk. And, you know, he can do stuff. And Heinrich can't do any stuff anymore. But Thibodeau, you know, is just – he's stubborn. And so anyways – that's a sort of long-winded way of saying that I worry about Thibodeau versus Kidd, because I just think that Kidd is better at making those sorts of adjustments and having a sense of what lineups are going to work based on how his team is being played. Like, the fact that Thibodeau has run the jumbo lineup as much as he has, seen that it's not working and then continues to go to it, just doesn't do a lot for my confidence in his, you know, I don't know, in what he's seeing out there, because it just seems like he's so focused on defense that he ignores the other side of the ball, and it really makes for a frustrating team to watch. So that's why I complain a lot about Thibodeau.
Do you have you got anything you would like to plug and get out there?
I've been writing posts every Monday, starting over the last 2 weeks, at Today's Fast Break, which is a new website that's out there. I've been just doing these little quick hits that are, they call them Fast Break Factoids. I wrote about, 2 weeks ago, I wrote about Stephen Curry being incredible off the dribble, and then he, you know, promptly went out and went Nova in a big game, which was nice, because it was like, oh, that was the game where everybody was like, oh yeah, Steph is the MVP, because he did it on national TV, even though he's been doing it all year. And then the next week I wrote about the Thunder's defense being their real problem, not Russell Westbrook, because they don't have any interior defense. And that's kind of irrelevant now because they're out of playoffs, but I saw a lot of people talking about, or a lot of talk about, you know, Russell Westbrook shoots too much, and or Russell Westbrook just dominates the ball too much. And, you know, if you look at their roster, they just don't have a lot of talent outside of him, with Ibaka and Durant especially missing in action. So, yeah, he had to dominate the ball, but their defense was really the thing that killed them down the stretch. They couldn't stop anybody, which is kind of what happens when, you know, Enes Kanter is your center, and you have Deion Waiters playing rotation-level minutes. Those two guys are pretty bad.
All right, so go check that out. Today'sFastBreak.com?
Yep.
All right, so go check that out. Kevin, thank you very much, and hopefully we'll catch up with you later on in the playoffs.
Sounds great.
As we transition from the Bulls to the Bucks, our previous guest, Kevin Ferragan, gave us something interesting to talk about with the new guest, Eric Benning from SBNationsBrewHoop.com. Eric, how you doing today?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So Kevin is pretty adamant that Jason Kidd is an advantage over Tom Thibodeau. Do you agree or disagree with that stance?
I think for now I'm going to disagree, just based on the fact that in Kidd's 2 years as a coach, he's only had 1 year in Brooklyn, 1 year in Milwaukee. So I don't want to say he won't have consistency as a head coach, but he hasn't had it displayed yet. So for right now, I don't want to give Kidd the advantage over Tibbs, because Tibbs has proven it in the regular season and the playoffs. But what I will say is Kidd does seem a little more willing to adapt, like, off of his game plans. So maybe that's kind of where Kevin was going to. I know Tibbs is more of a traditional guy and a conservative guy on the offense and defense. But, yeah, he doesn't really like to switch it up too much. So maybe that's where Kidd might have an advantage. But for now, I'm going to stick with the more experienced guy and Tibbs.
You nailed it. That was the exact point that Kevin made regarding why, or at least part of the reason why he liked Kidd over Thibodeau, was he used examples of the Nets-Raptors series last year, how Kidd made adjustments as that series went on, and he doesn't think Thibodeau would be willing to do something like that. And with the Bucks, I mean, there's a lot of lineup versatility there. How do you think they go about trying to match up with Chicago in this series?
Well, it's a little interesting. I know the whole point of Milwaukee's defense is kind of in the shadows of what Golden State's doing as well, where they have all these versatile players that can guard multiple positions so that if they do get switched off or something like that, they can easily do that and not be in too much of a disadvantage. As far as how they match up, Chicago's kind of tricky. I know a lot of people in Milwaukee weren't looking forward to matching up with Chicago. Their combination inside with Powell and Taj Gibson and Noah is a little tough for people like Zaza Pachulia and Ersan Ilyasova, more slower, or I guess that's a good way to describe them. What was I saying? Yeah, so the Bulls just kind of have an advantage in terms of experience and, I guess, just a more wide skill set, so to speak. So I think Chicago has the advantage there. Also, just in terms of how the Bucks would match up on the perimeter, it's an interesting matchup with guys like Jimmy Butler and Giannis Antetokounmpo, which is pretty easy to say.
You got that down pretty good. I have a question for him. I wrote Greek Freak down. I cheat.
Yeah, with time, it takes about 10 minutes. Just sit in front of the mirror and say it to yourself. You get used to it.
I can say I'm a Knicks fan, so I could say Theanis. I don't even know if that's right, but I just call him by his first name, and I just pretend the last name doesn't exist.
For the record, it's Thanasis.
Thanasis. See, you're better than me, and you don't even root for him. God damn it.
You got like 60% of it, right? It's better than most people. So, going back to that, on the wings and in the backcourt, I don't want to say Giannis and Jimmy Butler are push, because Jimmy Butler is probably going to be the most improved player. But it's kind of an interesting, like, Jimmy Butler will have an advantage of whoever guards him. But on the same end, I think Giannis, being as ridiculous as he is, will have an advantage on whoever guards him. And then just looking at point guards, I'm not sure what Derrick Rose's status is at this point. But the last time these two teams played, Jason Kidd just had Michael Carter-Williams take Aaron Brooks in the post on almost every single possession, and it worked out in MCW's favor. I think he had like 15 points in a quarter on Aaron Brooks, so it'll be interesting to see how Kidd uses his length and versatility to sort of combat the Bulls and their more traditional and like paint-based offense, I guess.
As Michael Carter-Williams has had more time to adjust and get comfortable with the Bucks, how has he started to fit in, and how have they looked with him in the lineup?
Well, I think the thing most people would point to right away is his inability to really shoot from anywhere outside of the paint. For now, I'm just looking at the stats right now. Since they dealt for him, their offensive rating went from 102.1 to 97.5. And I think a lot of that, even though the starting lineup stats for the Bucks haven't been too different since May left, I just think MCW's inability to shoot and kind of be a threat from the perimeter has kind of condensed the Bucks offense, so to speak. So I think he's starting to learn under Kidd, like, where his spots are and how he can be effective. But there's still, the Bucks still need some sort of replacement for Knight's ability to stretch the floor and give more open driving lanes to guys like Giannis or Chris Middleton, or hopefully in the future Jabari Parker. So they've looked okay, but there's still obviously a lot of room for them to grow on offense.
So I'm based out of Phoenix. Knight takes some horrid shots.
Yeah, he definitely does. Oh, I'm sorry. Just go ahead.
No. That you can respond to that. I was just going to expand on that, but that covered it. He takes some horrid shots.
Yeah, he does. It's interesting because he made some really clutch shots for Milwaukee when they needed it, and right now they don't really have that guy who can step up at late in games and be willing to take and make that shot. But at the same time, I remember being really frustrated when he would come down on like 3 or 4 straight possessions and come off a pick and roll and pull up from like 20 feet and take a pretty difficult jumper. So it's interesting. I wonder what Phoenix, what they're going to do with him. Obviously, this summer they need to make a decision on whether to pay him. So it'll be interesting.
And with like those shots, like if there was like 4 or 5 seconds left on the shot clock, you can live with it a little more. He's doing it with like 19 and 20 seconds left. I'm just, you sit there and you're just like amazed. You're like, what in the world is going on here? All right, what's your excitement level for playoff Greek Freak?
It's really interesting because, I mean, in Giannis's rookie year, we were expecting nothing, or essentially nothing, and he came out and had these flashes of brilliance and all that. And this year we were expecting slow improvement, and he's, I forgot what his totals are right now, but he's even surpassed what he expected for this year. So it's hard for me, like, I'm just trying to think of a reasonable expectation for playoff Giannis. And I have, like, my projection is kind of what he's doing now, maybe more consistently, like 15 points, 5 rebounds, like 3 assists or whatever. But he's shown a penchant recently to play a little bit angry and play inspired. So I'm trying to remain optimistic, or not optimistic, realistic about Giannis in the playoffs. But he could surprise us once again and just take over a series. I have no idea. I'm very, very excited because I, like his whole career, it's been a surprising and kind of exciting unknown.
Did it ever come out why he got benched for that game against the Knicks, or has that been kept completely silent?
Well, you know, Kidd said coach's decision in the press conference a bunch, and it was kind of explained the next day. There were a few rumors or reports or whatever that he did it to show his the other players that, like, sometime they may have an important game and they might not have Giannis available, so I guess he did that in an effort to bond the other players. And maybe, like, obviously there's the whole, maybe he just lit a fire under Giannis because he was kind of struggling in the game or two before that. But there hasn't really been, like, anything, like, definite as to why Kidd did it. It was just, like you said, it was a coach's decision. And obviously it worked out, as you saw in the Knicks game.
Well, right, anything you try works out in the Knicks game. That doesn't count.
That's true. That is true.
Okay, so it sounds like some sort of motivational ploy more, not that something bad happened or anything like that, or he screwed up or something like that. It seems some aspect motivationally, whether it was for Giannis or whether it was for his teammates, there was some sort of mind game being played there.
I don't know for sure if there wasn't any, like, minor disciplinary thing or not, but I think it was mostly just to kind of refocus Giannis and light a bit of a fire under him.
Cool. All right. That's good to know. Anything you would like to plug and get out there?
I guess if you're looking for some pretty high-quality Bucks coverage, obviously visit roohoop.com. We have a lot of fun covering the Bucks, and we don't get to do playoff coverage too much, so thank you for the opportunity, and check us out.
All right, so go over to brewhoop.com. You can see what Eric Benning, Frank Madden, and all the other people over there do. It's good stuff. And thank you very much, Eric, for stopping by for the podcast. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good one.